Welcome to season 2, episode 11.
No, it's not. It's episode 12. We just went through 12. This.
This is a very professional production, love you know. Never not creative. And our guests this week are laughing at us, right, like blatantly in front of us, as if this is some sort of amateur production.
A very warm welcome to Chris Doyle and Wilson Leong from Christopher Doyle & Co.
Hello.
Hi.
We are here today to talk about This Is Not University.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want to kick us off and tell us what it is? What
sure.
motivated you to start This Is Not University?
Yes.
Why it exists?
Yes. I don't know if I'll cover all three.
One question at a time.
No, it's okay.
I can take a three-prong question. It's good. Three-part question.
I have a question in three parts.
This is like those people at conferences.
First, a little about me.
Those people at conferences that get up and you go and go, is there a question coming? In fact, we went to that event. Yeah. Anyway.
I love it. I'm fine with multiple part questions. What is it? This Is Not University is, I think the simplest way to explain it is it's a mentorship program. I think that it's, yeah, that's, and that probably even sounds too fancy. It's really, it was born out of, I guess, two things that were kind of, that we saw happening. One of which we experienced a lot of people, or a lot of students, I should say, like any studio does really, requesting internships and wanting to kind of come in and sit for weeks at a time and all that sort of stuff, which is something that we can't really facilitate, both because we don't really have the physical space, but also because we don't have what we would feel is the appropriate amount of time to dedicate to it. And Wilson and I were talking about this on the way over, that you there really is an expectation, a very fair expectation, I think, on the part of students who come to do internships, that you will get a significant amount of attention and time and help. And I don't think I certainly didn't think as a studio owner that we had that time. So that was the first kind of thing that we were kind of experiencing. And the second one was that the more students that we met and interviewed and had kind of contact with, I personally felt were showing signs of potentially heading down paths and that were questionable and having expectations around where they should be at and the stages that they're at. I was kind of getting increasingly uncomfortable about and wanted to kind of, wanted to sort of offer some sort of like bridge or some sort of, I don't know, just some sort of play some sort of part in that transition between university and work. That's kind of all it is, really.
So when you say that, you like they were ahead of their station almost, is it? Is that what?
Yeah, I think that's probably a way to put it. I've got to be really careful because it's become quite a kind of like, I've copped a lot of shit for it, you know, like I think because, and it's been a really interesting conversation on Twitter because I had always kind of probably leveled most of the blame at the universities and probably towards students for a large part, which I think now, having talked about it a lot with people, is probably wrong. And I think it's actually more a product of what studios have come to expect of students. Mm-hmm. But also, and I kind of always have suspected this and maintained this, that the rise of social media and the kind of exposure that students get to design and the speed at which they get exposed to it places an enormous amount of pressure on the students. So those two things combined, you kind of end up with, you know, the students coming out of courses, or not even coming out of them, midway through them, feeling like they need to be, from my perspective as someone who's in the industry, they feel like they need to be far further ahead than they actually are. Mm. And I think, I used to think that was just kind of like unchecked ambition and ego paired with the social media thing. And I've come to realize now that actually it's the result of an enormous amount of pressure that they're feeling, and also expectations on studios expecting more of them than they're ready to give. Mm. Yeah. So we kind of wanted to kind of like really, really like chip away at that, like obviously only a few students at a time, and then also make the events a very big part of it as well. So do bulk events where we can talk to, you know, 70, 80, 90 people about a whole bunch of stuff that we can kind of pack in and talk about as well at the same time. I've forgotten what the three questions were, but
I think that covers them.
Does it?
Yeah.
I've always, so you wouldn't know, but I've actually always kind of described it to people for you.
Have you? Good.
As this, but
you should
but
have asked Andy. Andy, you did it himself.
No, but as a like, what I like about it is that you look, the stuff that you said at the beginning, which is you realize that you don't have enough time to do an internship program.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
or space.
Therefore,
time and space. Yeah.
And so your way of giving back is to have a very structured mentorship.
Yeah. I think the other thing, sorry, the other big thing that I didn't mention was that I was mentored very, and I've talked about this a lot whenever I've given talks, I was mentored, I think, in the very, very true sense of the word,
yeah.
in my second job, which I stayed in for kind of 4 or 5 years. And I think it had a profound effect on me. And I think it really shaped not only my career, but how then I would mentor and deal with staff and designers as well. So I think that, so there's a whole kind of circle of life, you know, thing going on there as well, that I feel like if everybody kind of passed whatever they had learnt and whatever they'd experienced along, then you're kind of yeah. kickstarting, and that sounds really wholesome, but you are kickstarting this kind of cycle of knowledge sharing that, I mean, half the stuff that I kind of bang on about is stuff that my second creative director said to me anyway, like literally recycle some yeah. of the stuff. I hear myself yeah, yeah. say it in meetings, and I hear myself say it to the designers at work. So I don't even, it's not even information I own. It's just yeah. stuff that hit me in a right way, and I'm like, cool, I'll just take that, make my own version of it, and hand it over. And then presumably, you know, the guys that kind of work in the studio will do the same thing when they're my age. Don't worry, that's not for a long time. Mm-hmm. Don't panic.
If I get there.
Yeah, you'll get there.
So Wilson was one of the
first... was a bit dark for a second.
Was yeah. it the first program?
Yeah, you're talking about death. Either way, I think it's going to be a lot. Yeah. Wilson was the first... Yeah, intake of that program.
What motivated you to apply for it, and what was it that you put in your application? Do you remember?
Well, actually, I had to trawl through the TNU emails to go into the 2018 program applications to look at what I wrote. But why I applied for it, I think originally I actually wasn't thinking of applying. I was like, you know, I had already done 3 internships, and I'm already like in halfway through my honors degree, like will I have time for this, et cetera, et cetera. But then, you know, like I really admired the studio, and I was like, this is a really perfect, you know, opportunity to sit in and just to absorb knowledge, to like be visible to the studio as well. And to, you know, just to absorb, be like learn through osmosis.
Yeah.
Just like absorb everything that I can. And I knew that a big part of, I guess, professional life was soft skills and like etiquette within the studio, and I thought that this is what TNU offered, an observation in the professional working life of a real, well, not a real, like as opposed to a fake studio, but, like,
a studio. Just a Hollywood set. Yeah. There's loads of those.
There's a bunch of people in another country actually doing
yeah.
that. All the computers are just cardboard. It's all apart.
It's like an IKEA set.
So I guess that's like why I applied, and then what I put in my application, I think I just went about it in a very like honest way. Like I am a student, and I really want to learn, and I have, you know, like I've got a lot of passion and ambition that I would like to build on through TNU. Yeah, I guess I was just earnest about like really wanting to learn.
Yeah, and that's
this is that fine line, isn't it, between first job and intern / mentorship, because I think like I've even given advice of like if it's your first job, for example, I would still have an expectation that you're going to bring something to the job that we can't do.
Yes.
Versus the other bit, which is like, you know, it's an advertised position, which is actually you should come here to learn.
Yeah.
And that's a quite big difference, right?
I'm probably softer on the first job thing though. I think there's probably a chunk of both of those things in the first job. I think that the really nice thing about that, which we haven't spoken about actually until I just heard you say that, was that you came into it thinking that you would be able to observe all of the stuff that has nothing to do with design, really. And, and that's the thing that I think, that's when I hear students kind of come out and go, cool, I'm ready to go. And I'm like, yeah, in some ways you're ready to go, but there's this enormous kind of journey that starts when you finish university. And this is the thing that I think it's natural to feel like you're ready to go because you've just slogged it out for 3 to 5 years and you're knackered and you're like, okay, show me the money and show
me
the end
tools.
Of this.
Let's get this bread.
The harsh reality of that is you are starting another journey. Yeah. Like it's like finishing a marathon and someone going, cool, grab yourself a drink.
The next one's
over there. No one wants to hear that, right? But that's what the first job is. And I think, so for us it is, you are looking for somebody who's going to contribute, be keen, bring a new skill set, you know, and Wilson's already done that. He's only been there for 4 months and has done things in the studio that both stylistically and creatively that we have never done before. So, but I personally, and look, every studio is going to be different. I have a, and I get this, this is going to sound wrong. I have a very kind of measured expectation there, because I feel like you are meant to be in those formative years, and you're not. You know, I've seen you this saying to Wilson on the way over. I don't have a huge expectation on anyone coming straight out of a course and solving any of our top tier problems in the studio, and I don't think you should be able to. But I think you should want to be interested in them and work your way towards them, and then, yes, as you say, Andy, in some way, shape, or form, contribute something that we have had missing in the studio, which can be design-based, can also be cultural, and I don't mean that in like a box-ticking way. I mean culture as in studio culture. I mean, literally, music tastes, you know, like references to films, like, you
crosswords.
Know,
crosswords,
you know, and that stuff, that's all that stuff is the fabric of how the team works, you know, and a lot of it doesn't have anything to do with design, so.
Yeah, yeah, so true.
Wilson mentioned that he'd done 3 internships before.
Yeah. Were they paid?
No.
3 for 3.
That's all. Yeah.
It's not
yet. What was the experience like with those, and what differed and between that and TNU?
Well, the experience that I had of those 3 internships, I didn't come out of it loving any of them, but I was very appreciative of everything that I learned from there. And I think that was the difference between TNU and my internships, was that I went into those internships hoping to learn a lot and be mentored, but then the stuff that I learned, I felt, was a byproduct of having to like fulfill a role and to do a job. Whereas with TNU, I was purely there to learn and absorb knowledge. And I feel like in those internships, because I was fulfilling a role and like I was, I guess, being brought on to take on, I guess, an overflow of work. Then there's that sort of like, you're there to learn, but then you're also like trying to, you know, make the business profit, then you can't fully, I guess, absorb and like get everything. It's like, I don't know, when you're eating certain foods, like you can't absorb all the nutrients, that sort of thing.
I think TNU is the opposite of that. Like we say to the students that come in, it's very much a one-way street. Like it is, if you want to come in for a day a week and kind of book in meetings with us and do catch-ups, great. You want us to set you a brief for a project, great. You want to ask us 1,000 questions about presentations, great. You want us, you know, you want to do folio reviews, cool. Don't want to do any of those things, cool. Want to sit there and work and just listen to us talk about work and sit in on meetings, cool. Like it's very much an extraction process. And I think that's why, that to me is one of the big differences with that and internships, is it's about the student, and there's a lot of initiative on them and the onus is on them to take knowledge from us. And, you know, the mandate with all the guys in the studio, even Wilson and Emily, who are new to the studio, but Stephen and Josie and I, is that they can ask us anything and get our help on anything and take as much or as little as that as they want. Yeah. We don't take anything from the student, I guess, in that sense of the exchange. I mean, we do in terms of, obviously, we're very selective. We interview people. It's like a job process. Yeah. And the people that are in those roles, we're very careful that we feel like they are going to be a great member of the team, even if they're in their limited capacity. But yes, it's very much again, I know it sounds overly wholesome, but it is a knowledge sharing exercise, not an exchange.
But I think we've talked about internships before, and that should be the basis of an internship. I mean, the definition of it is that the intern should be learning more than they're giving.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in trade, it's apprenticeship, right? Like you are absolutely meant to be doing very little, taking on as much as you can, getting paid some sort of small fee, and coming out the other end of it more qualified than you did at the start, like, which is not the reality for a lot of internships.
Yeah. Well, not when you're doing overflow. I mean, you can make the best of overflow, obviously,
and you're still getting exposed to work. And
But that's exploitation. It's not a learning environment.
I was inherently like learning from having to do
learning by practice. But
Which I think is another thing I've loved about and every student has approached TNU differently. Like we've had 4 students through now. I've loved watching how they've taken the experience and kind of like applied it to their own stuff, and that's kind of cool, because it's like it's driven by them as opposed to what you're saying, which is like it's driven by the studio and what you're going to do that day. So you are learning, but not as much as you could be, and not the sort of stuff
that
you want to be, and not the most important stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a role for internships?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. I think that it's actually quite funny. I was saying it with it all the way over. I've spent so much money and time on TNU that actually we could have had an army of
could have
had
an intern
in the studio, because we're all just like, no, we're not. It's all free, but actually, really, the reality, and I'm not crying poor on it. The reality is, we've spent an enormous amount of time and money on it. But I think I think there is a place for it. I think provided they're paid and provided you have the appropriate culture, space, and time to facilitate it. You know, I think that if it's an afterthought or an overflow exercise and unpaid, then you kind of, you know, there's three boxes that you've kind of not ticked straight away. So yeah, I think there is a place for it. I think I know you guys have done a huge amount of like thinking and talk and work around internships, and it seems to me I get really frustrated with it, because I find not the never not creative work on it, but just the idea that it's like free pitching. I feel like we've been having the same conversation for 20 years, and like so much of this stuff is, so much of this stuff does have easy fixes to it, and so much of it is so big and quite unsolvable. Yeah. Like any big problem is that you've got so many people feel that it's a different thing and different definitions of fair, that it's very hard to standardise or uniform it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like the quick fixes rely on the kind of business or company or the person running the company inherently just wanting to be a good person.
Totally. And absolutely. And so much of this stuff is just around
like
good people.
You're a good, you want to run your business well and in a humane way, then you would not do certain things. We just can't rely on that anymore?
Well, some aren't aware of it though, right? Like they've been in businesses before. And so, you know, I've probably changed my opinion on it a little bit, which is like, I would like to assume that people either just don't know or are trying to do their best and are doing what's been done before or what others around them are doing, right? So there is plenty of places that just assume, and we've worked together in a studio where it's like, oh, we're very, very busy.
Yeah.
We should get some interns in.
Yeah.
And that is, it became the norm. But if you told them that actually this is potentially damaging the future of our industry and it's not a necessarily good experience for people trying to come through, and just because you did it doesn't mean that it can't be done better, then I think people would choose a better option. I hope that
I think some people would. I think you're always, to your point, there's just always going to be jerks, right? There's always people that are going to free pitch. There's always going to be people who run free internships. I think that's just true of every problem in the world, right? There's always going to be bad people. So, but I mean, there's more conversation and more platforms for conversation than there's ever been around it. So you would hope there'd be some sort of shift. I mean, I would tell you, like, we do, you know, 2020 events, which I know, have you guys been at 2020, AGDA 2020 events?
Yeah. Yes, yeah,
I think I've only done it once, I think.
At the last 2020.
There we go, that's where it's from, that's it.
But I asked every single student if they had done an internship that night, and they were like, most of them had, and 90% of them were free.
Yeah.
And this is like 20 students who were super hungry, applying for 20 limited spaces at an AGDA event to talk to people who the vast majority of had done unpaid internships at studios that I knew, because I would ask them the studio, and they would just tell you, and it's like, you know, they are good studios, you know, with well-respected designers. Like
some of those are breaking the law.
Yes,
I mean, that's the other part. There are definitely some grey areas, but some of them are actually black and white. You can't get away from.
I've thought a lot about this, like, how do you define it? And I think there is a grey area, but I think it's pretty small. Like, this idea of contribution and participation versus observation, like that to me is kind of where it stops. Like, as you said, if you're doing work that the company will, that will affect a company's income,
bottom line,
even at its smallest
even if it's for the your own brand, it doesn't matter.
It's still time that's being spent.
Everything is marketing. Everything is kind of sellable, and everything impacts the kind of how that company makes money. Is that those people should get paid? Like, it's just, that's where it's not great to me. And I think it's TNU's never, there's never been any discussion that it would be a paid role, because it's kind of the opposite of that. It's purely observational, as I said, very one way, and that it wasn't ever something we kind of wrestled with. But it's a no-brainer. But I've been in agencies where they've done it, you know, like, and I think there is a historical aspect to it. It's the same as a free pitching thing, both on, like, for what students expect in terms of free internships, what studios expect, and the free pitching thing is the same. You've got this kind of like industry history of clients kind of going, well, yeah, cool, that's what we do. So it's that thing of like the change is so big but you know, what else can you do other than talk about it and keep talking about
it? Well, and the first thing we teach you when you come out of uni is to go and work for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we go, we have a problem with making money.
No one wants to pay us. Surprising, right? Because we've undervalued ourselves from day one.
Yes.
So you've done two programs, mm-hmm. and you're intaking for the third now.
Yes.
It'll probably be closed by the time this is up.
When does it close? Wilson,
28th of July.
Midnight.
Oh, midnight.
Get your
so many students at 11.
If you're listening to this now, sorry.
It's probably too late.
We did get some at midnight. Yeah. Hang on, what's the date today?
I bet. It's the 24th.
Ages.
This will be.
Ages. Yes.
Have you changed the program since the first one?
I don't think we have we?
Not a whole lot. I feel like with the first program, it was still sort of like testing the waters. So
yeah.
Me and Kate were just kind of, Kate, the other TNU student, it was just kind of like feeling things out, seeing how like it could go with the flow pretty much. And yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's changed that much. It was,
but the structure, do you have like some components?
We do have some structure. I think we kind of learned really early on that we're just like, we just want this to be casual. Just come and go as you please. But that doesn't really work because students have, you know, like actual jobs, study, classes. Like, it's easy for us. We're there 5 days a week in certain hours. It's like come and go. But I think it was the thing we worked out, I think fairly early on when you guys started, was like choosing a day that was like a designated day where they can come in and sit all day. And I think that once that was kind of locked in, it really helped because I felt like students felt like they had access that wasn't a surprise to us. It wasn't kind of, they weren't intruding. And then that's really the only kind of formal, I think, the thing that gets locked in.
Yeah.
And then we do just have lots of regular catch-ups with whoever's there to say, to basically say, what do you need? Like, what do you want? Like, what do you want to show us your folio? Do you want to, you know, we talked a lot with Wilson about his honours project, you know, and we same with Kate and you know, this last pair of students, we gave one of them a brief, set a brief for her and had multiple catch-ups where she presented work. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of there for the student to define. Mm. And I think we're trying not to make that too, like, put too much pressure on them. It's kind of like, cool, you've been accepted, now you tell us what's about. Because that's shitty, you know, But I think there is a little bit of pressure, isn't there, placed on the student to kind of make it what they want.
Yeah, there's a bit of responsibility on our end to, you know, email ahead and to kind of schedule in, like, maybe today I'm going to catch up about my honours project or kind of get this tutorial on how to, like, you know, mock up some billboards or something like that.
Yeah, even things like that, like mocking things up. We have conversations around type foundries and like, you know, where like how to get trials from foundries. Like, just these things that you don't... And correct me if I'm wrong, but and I don't think it talked about a lot.
No, they're not taught.
No,
not
really. No, that's stuff you just pick up when you start a job. But it's a great opportunity to be able to do that before.
Yeah, and the kind of I was going to say the boring side of it, which is not, but the non-design side of a design presentation. So what's the front end of a presentation look like? How do we get up and tell a story to a client? What does a naming brainstorm look like? Well, you know, all of that sort of stuff, you know. And those conversations are, I think, really interesting to be a fly on the wall for students. Mm. And they're also not often very glamorous. And they can also be kind of dang. Mm. Like, you know, did we take you guys to any presentations?
You took me and Kate to a Spotify presentation.
Yeah.
Was it a presentation or was it just like a...
I think it was just a meeting.
Yeah.
A briefing. It's just the way Chris presents.
Yeah, exactly. Everything feels like a presentation.
And to be honest, I was so tired in that and I kept on yawning but tried not to.
Yeah, doing the secret yawn. Yeah. I'd be loads.
Did you do those sort of like head nods? Were you
like nodding?
Micro sleeps?
Oh, yeah. Almost.
And the client's like, oh, they don't even like this work.
Was it a long meeting?
Yeah, I think it was a long meeting and the room was really warm, so it kind of only amplified how, like,
Someone was tapping, like, fingernails in the background. And
a little bit of whispering, ASMR. Yeah.
But yeah, stuff that, which you know, you
the
don't
day-to-day.
Get to experience. And the weird thing about that is that, like, even when you start often as a graduate designer and a shooter, you don't often go to the meetings anyway. No. Like, I remember at Moon, I'll never forget, because I came from Saatchi's, which was like a 3 or 4 person team, and everybody did everything. Like, I got to present way earlier than I should have, like terrible presentations. But my boss was very, like, off you pop, like pushing you out onto the diving board kind of thing. And I think sometimes I sank, and he would kind of jump in and save me. And it was like deep end stuff, but it was great for me. And I remember that when I went to Moon, which doesn't exist anymore, I was very used to that. And we had a photo shoot or Yeah, I think I had a photo shoot, and I remember saying to the traffic manager at the time, I was like, well, I'll, you know, like, because I was going to go to the shoot, and I was like, and I'm going to take Robbie Powell, like, who was I think 18 at the time, like, this designer friend of ours I think he was doing like an internship. And I was like, or maybe he was a junior, and I was like, well, I'll take Robbie to the shoot. And she was like, well, you can't do that. And I was like, why not? She said, because he's not on the job, it's not billable, it's not. And it was this to me, it was really eye opening, because it was this really kind of like, nothing to do with design and nothing even really to do with mentorship, just this very like functional money related conversation around. And anyway, I came out the other end of it kind of going, how's he going to get that experience now? Because that, like, that's the interesting bit, going on the shoot, going to the presentation. Like, it's that whole thing of like everyone chips in on a huge presentation to a client, and then two people get in the cab and go, and no one else gets to watch it. And that stuff to me, not that we do much of that in TNU, but we would be open to doing it. Like, I would happily take students to meetings, and if they were keen to come. And I think that's getting exposed to that kind of stuff. That's the stuff that you cannot get exposed to at uni. So it doesn't matter how prepared I think a student thinks they are when they leave university, you haven't stood in front of a very angry board of people who don't like your work and then have to talk your way out of it. Like, it's, you know.
And is this because, so whose job is it? Because then there's like, how much can you learn at university, right? So you've got things like.
This is a very good question, because I got hammered for this on Twitter.
Yeah, like the basic skills of you should be able to do this and this and this with these tools that we provide you.
Yes.
But then, you know, how much time do you have to learn the softer skills, get the experience of actually how to run a project, and then whose job is it to teach you that? Because it's basically, I've spoken to a few people now, it's, there is a bridge that needs building between university and first job, because there's an expectation that you're going to come in job ready. Universities are selling students job ready, apparently,
which is a mistake.
And so your expectation is then come and do everything, and then they come into businesses and they go, oh, they're not really very job ready.
They think they're job ready.
Well, they've been told they are.
Yeah.
Because there's big billboards around saying so-and-so just got a job at Google, and thanks to our university.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's a very good question, because I think university is meant to be not about all that stuff. This is going to finish with me not having the answer, just so you know. I think it is meant to be... I think it is meant to be dominated by, finding your way through what you're interested in, figuring out what you want to focus on, what you're interested in, like developing software skills, like learning craft, all that kind of stuff. And you're right, I don't think you can learn all that stuff at university. My gripe is that we just need to slide the needle back a little bit into what I would call the commercial realities of working in a design business. And it's not all universities, hashtag not all universities. it's not all schools or courses, but I think the majority are focused too much on the exploration and the creative development and not enough on the business. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that they start teaching all those things you just listed out, but that you need to be dipping your toe into the reality of working in a design studio. Yeah. What do you think? Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree, because like all the way through uni, well, I mean, actually, I missed a semester where that might have been taught, but I still, to this day,
I do. I mean, anyone listening, Wilson's a Bobby student. top
honest,
of his class.
Honest.
You got your degree real?
I haven't graduated, actually.
Photoshop skills are excellent.
He sent you a link to an online diploma.
It's just one that I printed out myself.
Gives you those warnings, but this side is not secure.
Too good.
Proceed.
Was the logo slightly pixelated around the edges?
So. Yeah.
I didn't get to learn any of that stuff, and I don't think that was a priority on the university's kind of agenda.
Was one of your... Did you do an internship at university?
I did.
And what were you told was the objective of that internship?
If I can remember back to that contract that I signed with the university, I actually don't remember anything from there. But I think it was just to observe like the workings of a studio. But actually, I remember this one particular line where it said, students will not be paid, or I don't know, some fancy words like remuneration and all that stuff. Students will not be paid for the work that they do at this internship. And that was one of the things I remember from my contract.
So the whole, if you said something about it being observational, so maybe the the idea is there and the concept is there that you would have these university internships that are observational and therefore try to at least help that gap. But in reality, businesses are seeing it as an opportunity to get...
I think businesses see it as... I think the, I think the worst business sees it as an opportunity to exploit. I think... I also think there is this... if you were in there for 5 days a week and you were like, make sure you don't do any work because then we'd have to pay you. I mean, that's just boring.
Yeah,
you're just
going
to sit there. So, I mean, that's another thing that we make really clear with TNU is you have to bring a laptop and work in the studio. Like, otherwise you're just sitting there for five hours, like, staring at us. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? And, even though we have lots of catch-ups and check-ins and stuff like that, we can't sit with someone all day. So, I think there is... I think it's difficult with the internship thing because you're there... If you're there for, like, 3 or 4 weeks, 5 days a week, and you're not working... What are you going to do? Like,
it's a bit awkward, isn't it?
Well, it's like you're sitting there. But then if you're working, then you need to be getting paid.
But let's say like the university's had, like let's say there was much more of a clearer objective, which is the role for your internship is to get commercial experience, to build your softer skills. Like if that was actually part of the curriculum for an internship, then that would be good. And then the internships after university can be paid, you can be a little bit more ready, and you know you're in a position to be able to contribute rather than just take.
I don't think that's God. Even when I was at university, that was not even that was nowhere near the agenda of an internship. It was just to go in there and work. You weren't the idea that you would sit on a meetings and observe how people interact and how the culture works. I mean, that's just not on anyone's agenda.
Yeah, mood boarding and coffee fetching and making sure the printer's full and
Do you think that studios, the old model of studios or agencies where everything's quite siloed, so everyone, you know, you have an account manager and they do account management and designers do design, and like if you're a junior you never see a presentation, whereas I feel like, and I don't know if this is right, but studios these days have a more flexible, especially if they're smaller, the designers talk to clients, and maybe the university models of learning to be in a studio was just get on the tools, whereas now actually the tools of being able to present creative work and sell your work in and change someone's mind
and liaise with clients.
I feel like it's more of a reality now than before.
I think that we all know how long it takes an education system to change. You know, it is a huge kind of overhaul. So I think there probably is a huge amount of legacy there of just where we feel we're teaching the skill set, this person needs to get into that job. And I guess the thing that, like we were saying before, I think it's very true of small studios, it's very true of our studio, that skill set, there's so much more to it than just design, you know, and most of it's people-based, and it's, it's like working within a team, and it's like fitting into a culture or figuring out where you fit into a culture, dealing with clients, who it's just not always, you know, I think we've got, generally we've got pretty great clients to deal with. Like there's no, like we don't kind of, you know, we're not tearing our hair out. We're not like, we've had a really good run with that, but it's still a skill. It's still, when someone sends an email back and goes, I don't like this and this and this and this and this and this, what next? You've got to know how to write back to those emails, you know? And I put a lot of pressure, and I guess I have a lot of expectation on the team that they learn how to do that quite quickly. And we help them, you know, like we absolutely kind of help and jump in wherever we can, but we don't have account service, you know, we don't have project managers. We're all designers. So that it's especially true of our studio that you need to develop all those skills quite quickly because it's in, and I know I say the kids saying this, but they have nothing to do with design, like nothing. So yeah, it's not, I think that stuff is not being taught. And yeah, I guess to your original question, Andy, should it be at university? I don't know, because who teaches it? And then I just feel like there's, at the moment, there's no exposure to it, and there needs to be.
But you
a
can go
bit,
back to, you can actually go back to school. Schools don't teach life skills.
No.
You know, and so it's the same.
They teach maths.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, exactly. Like, it's just
the quadratic equation.
Exactly. Yeah.
They don't teach you how to like apply for a home loan.
No.
No.
Save for a home loan.
So,
because it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's not a lot of it is probably how it's always been with all these things, which is frustrating. But I don't really know how you change that.
I mean, that's what I quite like about like the Foundry, for example. And I think Swinburne also do some work around like preparing you for how to run jobs, how to have difficult conversations with clients, how to get paid, what to do when you don't get paid. Like,
I think that's, I mean, and there's no reason.
I don't see why in 3 years.
I know.
In 3 years.
Well, there was that semester that you missed.
Yeah.
But then that, the
I mean, it could be that that was the semester, you know?
It could have been.
It would have been a full semester just on
that. Yeah, exactly. I think ETS like touches on this in the very last year, but like that was not enough to really kind of like really prepare you. Like it was a semester where, you know, you get to work with a client, where you get to work in a group and work on a real brief. But, you know, add all that time up and it might be like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, I know, like you normally had about 10 weeks to do those. I think you'll see you have like those, they bring a bunch of charities in and give you briefs and that kind of stuff, right? And it's, you know, it's not the reality of, you know, 2 weeks go. Don't like it, come back.
It's
such a small amount of time.
Not paying for it.
Yeah,
so I don't know how you'd... I guess you'd have to figure out what it looks like and then, how does it fit in and how much time of those 3 years does it take up?
But it is... I think there is no... You know, like, so we're working on a standardized internship program at the moment. So we created this group. There's, a, I don't know, there's like 10 or so people in the group that are all going to kind of come together and try and create something. But it does make me think that... There isn't one. There is probably one, which is the kind of what you sort of expect from an internship.
Yeah.
But there should be other options for businesses, which is very similar to this is not uni, like, you know, a mentorship program and be very clear about, you know, if you can't afford to take on an intern, you could do this.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's others which are like, you know, much more kind of apprenticeships. Because these things, they're quite different.
Yeah, they are. I don't know if you can... standardize. I think you can standardize and absolutely draw a line though around the payment aspect of it. Like I really do. Like I feel like if you are contributing to a business, then the business has to contribute to you. Like to me, that it's just not. There's no debate there. And I think, but yeah, I think there are variations of that. We've had a few like designers from different, like a couple in Melbourne, and I had a woman in Stockholm email me or DM me about a week ago saying, would you just expand it out and let anyone do it anywhere? And I guess the short answer and the best answer is yes, but it's also where it's difficult to...
But it's guidelines, isn't it? I guess it's a guide, not a blueprint.
Yes.
And I think that's what we'll end up is that these are the principles of the thing and the thing that you should adhere to, and these are things that you should never, ever, ever do.
Yeah.
And then the rest is like, yeah, you've got to kind of put your own mark on it and what works for you. Like, you know, you've ended up joining the company because of what you've sort of found out through that and what you found out about Wilson through.
So her was that if we were going to do it, like we barely got enough time to put into it ourselves, in terms of how it works, I would really want to like make it like a great version of that. Like, and I know, like just actually even expanding out the website that says someone could log on and get tools and make it and do it in their own city. The other thing is you really want to be careful that people were doing it properly, because we can't espouse all this kind of all these rules and all these kind of like ways of doing to hand it over to someone to actually for them just to do a shitty version of it. So there's a little bit of, I am a little protective of it because it's our kind of, you know, it's our internal thing, but then that also kind of goes against the whole reason of doing it, which is that the more people that would get exposed to that sort of stuff, the better. It's just a difficult thing to figure out.
It would mean more quality, more time and energy spent on quality control.
Exactly.
And making sure that everyone's...
Which is the thing we don't have time to do.
You can do it for... So...
We can barely do it for ourselves. you know, like putting on events, that just takes time. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like it's so much work. Yeah. And... You know, I think we've only done two, and they went really well. They were fun, but it was like it's very taxing, you know. But we want to do more of that stuff, you know. So it's it's hard. We had a university. I'm going to say school, university, course. I don't even
college,
know what it was.
Whatever.
College, yeah, exactly.
Institution.
Get in touch about like getting the presentation slides from the last talk that we gave to distribute to students, and I was very conflicted by it, because part of me says, of course, here's all the knowledge. The other part of me says, this is literally your job. And also the other part of me says, why weren't all those students at that event? Like that, like I just, you know, like it's this, I kind of feel like that's the easy way out of it, just to go, cool, we'll have that, and just, can we just do that here? I'm like, yeah, you can, but also, A, why aren't you doing it? And B, why aren't you?
Your business model is this.
That's what I mean. Like, literally, this is your job. Yeah. So, I do that's kind of an isolated example, but it did sort of strike me, not that they were lazy or, but just like you were saying, I don't even think they're aware of how that sounds us at our end, you know? I think they thought that was quite a normal thing to do.
But this is, so you said that's like maybe a rare occurrence, but I often see you on Twitter conflicted.
I'm a bit. That's my bio, conflicted. Am I often conflicted?
I feel like I can see, like when you're...
That was conflicted. That's amazing.
I was conflicted.
Really?
Yeah.
Am I conflicted? Yeah, that's good.
Thinking emoji.
Yes.
If I can see when you put stuff out there, and then you... Like, obviously, you have to react to what people are coming back with. And you're very, like, quite diligent on... reacting to most things.
I have, it's very time.
You can't reply to everyone, though,
No, but you're...
And nor should you.
Yeah.
No, true. No, well, look, there's just some incredibly unreasonable, I mean, the last big Twitter debate I had, I did this my massive kind of, like, rant about design students and and then talked a lot about TNU at the bottom of it, right? And I spent a lot of time kind of crafting the whole thread. And this guy wrote back and goes, you know... Yes, you're a leader in the industry, Chris. You could be changing this. And I was like, I'm trying to. Did you read the thread? Like, I'm not like, I wasn't just having a crack at everyone. Like, I'm genuinely like, this is a kind of what do we do thing. But I just thought it was a very weird response. But I am conflicted, and I have had some. I've said some stupid things on Twitter. Like, you say things, and then someone writes back and goes, you know. Actually, that was a stupid thing to say, and I'm like, fuck yes, it was a stupid thing to say. But so I'm trying to be a bit more.
Just don't run for prime minister in 12 years' time, because someone will drag it up on Twitter.
Drag it up. So I'm trying to be a bit more measured and considered with it. But it was that conversation that we had recently on Twitter with design students was illuminating, to say the least. It basically had schools, students, working designers, all these people basically throw us answers as to why they thought we were in the state that we were, which was fascinating, because it wasn't all the answers that I thought. And the studio thing being one of them. There was all these students kind of going, that's what studios expect. And I was like, Christ, do they? Like, that's terrible. Yeah. Like, that really hit me of like, my God, this is actually a problem on my side of the fence, you know? And
it's been created, right? It's only a product of what's been happening.
It's all those job ads with Ninja.
Exactly.
And needing proficiency across everything.
Just a
gun.
Just a gun, an all-rounder.
I mean, this is the multidisciplinary thing that you're expected to have all of these these talents before you come out.
People are just trying to get jobs, right?
Yeah. That's what I find interesting. It's like, you know, eventually what we end up doing as our job as well is doing as best as possible to kind of make our clients look good so that people buy them.
Yes.
And what we, you know, produce along the way is people that go and apply those same principles to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, some will get found out.
Yes.
Some won't. Others, you know, many don't, in fact.
Many don't, yeah.
And so you kind of are caught between this, dare I say, be a bit conflicted by the kind of recognition of, oh, geez, we created you. You know, you selling yourself like that, we created that.
Yeah.
But then once you get in there and the expectations are quite far away from each other, but people are doing it to get their foot in the door, then it's up to them to try and deliver on it, right?
Yeah, and I think it's that fine line between ambition and confidence versus arrogance and versus this sureness that I'm ready to go. And it's I always say that I would much rather meet a designer who wants to be great than a designer who tells me they're great. And the younger, or I shouldn't say younger actually, but the less experienced that voice is, the more uneasy I get about, you know. Like, I had an email, I was saying to Wilson, I wasn't going to say this, but here we are.
Give you a beer.
No, it was funny because off the back of that multidisciplinary specialist thing, I had a student, a high school student, email the other day asking for work, not work experience or internship, work. Saying and told me what he specialised in, and it, you know, and again, that's like, he doesn't know that I think that's a terrible way to phrase it, but it was interesting because I was just like, man, you, like, even at 16, like, you haven't finished high school, and you're you're there's no sense that what you're saying here is wrong, or sorry, not wrong, that's not the right word, that it's not accurate,
yeah.
that you're pitching yourself to me with specialties. Like, it's mind-boggling to me. And I do think in a way we have created it, but I also think that, Instagram and Behance and just this, I don't know, just this kind of like onslaught of all this amazing stuff has said to people, you need to be amazing. And if you're not, you're not going to get a job. And that I just think that's very sad. I think it's very scary. Would you like to expand on that? We've talked about this quite a lot.
Well, just the fact that, like, you know, uni students are already very impressionable, and then you're seeing all this stuff on Behance and Instagram, and the job ads tell you, we want this. Then as, you know, as designers, you say that, like, we've got this kind of disposition to, like, sell and to, like, one-up, you know, the next person to stand out.
Yeah.
Then that becomes, you know, I specialize in art direction. I don't even know what that is.
I always think when you're scrolling through Instagram that you're seeing, like, people's best work that they've spent hours on.
And a 2x2 square backlit in RGB.
Yeah.
That shit looks way better. None of the CMYK nonsense. No.
You haven't had to change the colour profile.
Exactly.
And if you think up the cumulative hours of all the stuff, all the best stuff that's on Instagram and all the worst stuff that doesn't make it there for all the people that you're scrolling through in a second, it's like there's no way you'll ever keep up with that kind of output.
No.
But
you're
doing it, and your brain thinks that that's what's meant to be.
Totally. That's the standard now. You know, there's a lot of designers that we see on Instagram, and that's they're very clear in their strategy, aren't they? That's their goal, is to get Instagram likes, to get certain feeds to repost them, to make weird posters that
chuck a funky font on it.
Get a funky
font. Put on a black background.
Black background.
Fruit Arts Club.
Exactly. And then this is the new fame, is that these feeds that have hundreds of thousands of followers repost you, then you get followers. I mean, it's not just true of design, it's true of all Instagram awfulness, is that, you know, but then I also think Instagram's amazing. Like, I love Instagram. Like, I extract so much inspiration, design inspiration from Instagram, and I only use it for design. It's got nothing to do with personal, family, anything. It's follow mostly designers, you know, a lot of friends as well, obviously, and that we only use it on the work account for work. And I love it, but it is toxic for young people.
Yeah, the expectations it creates, the fact that you only ever look up.
Yeah.
You never look down.
And you're just looking at
very rarely will you go, oh, my work's better than them.
Yeah.
You're always looking at, I wish I was that good.
And I'm doing that. Like, I'm 20 years in and I'm on there going like, oh, like, you know, like, this is all amazing.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of confluence of like technology, like literally just backlit, like it's like a tiny mini billboard, you know, and the idea that it's, you know, you're only seeing it for a few seconds, and it's like a perfect storm of just unattainable greatness, you know.
Which is, you know, algorithmically, it was created that way.
Absolutely. You know? And it's, you know, as I said, it's all industries, not just ours. Yeah. But that is a very, you know, that's an anxiety-inducing experience for someone who's about to start their career, isn't it? Like,
oh, we went to the design conference, and Martina Martian, do you know Martina Martian? So she's basically become famous for being one of the most prolific GIF creators, stickers on Instagram.
Oh, wow.
And she never wanted to, like, you know, she even says now, like, it's not, I don't want to be the GIF person on Instagram,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
5 million views of one of her GIFs.
Really? Yeah, like all the celebrities use her, like, little love hearts things all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
But she will go through massive highs and then massive lows because, you know, once you've had 5 million people use one of your stickers, how come only 100,000 have used the next one?
You know? Exactly.
Yeah. And so it's this, again, it's this, like, when your life is run by numbers.
Yeah. Which it isn't anymore on Instagram.
Well, you can see your own.
It is. Yeah, it's not so for you to judge other people, but there's still people will be chasing
right
those
direction.
Likes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It's an interesting choice. But then what... It has flow-on effects, right? So you can always tell when someone's bought followers because they'll have like 3,000 followers and then 7 likes on an image.
Mm. Yeah. And no comments.
And no comments. You're like, what? This is weird.
Yeah.
But now that you can't see the likes on someone else.
Yeah, the bought follower thing.
The bought follower thing is
Yeah.
It'll double down.
I think it'll
it could double down. Yeah.
Just go higher.
Oh, right.
So you could have like, oh, I'm an influencer. I've got 50,000 followers, and you wouldn't be able to
tell. Of course, because you'll see the number of followers though, won't you?
And then it'll be.
Yeah, of course.
Although my friends who work in sort of social media and all that, when they do get contacted by influencers, air quotes for those following at home.
Yeah, lots of air quotes.
They get them to send their Instagram insights or engagement activity, so then you can really tell.
Oh yeah, what
is the fake?
Who's the fake? Imagine being a fake influencer. Like what?
Right.
Like aspiring to that.
If you could design, if you could just start from scratch.
Yes.
What would internship programs do?
That's a big question. I think they would provide a safe, educational, paid, flexible experience. They were probably the words I would use.
From the business owner?
Yep.
And from the potential intern, if you dialed back a couple of years, what would...
Yeah, jump back in time. Just like a space where it's intentional and dedicated learning for me to really observe, you know, the good practices in a studio, but then also be able to, you know, flex my design muscles in a way to actually get to do some work.
And if you get paid for that, what is the reasonable level of accountability? Because I think that's, there's this, you know, the grey line, the grey area in the law is, does the student get more out of it than the business?
Yeah.
And so a lot of businesses will say, well, geez, you know, it takes ages for us to help this person along. Yeah. They do things four times as slow as everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm. What would be a, where do we end up with like a reasonable level of accountability?
I think that's really tricky because I think for me, it's about what's the word I'm looking for? It's about effort. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's about, because I think people will have to do things four times if they're on actual things.
Yeah.
They're learning something for the first time, being thrown in, and it's there'll be mistakes. And I think the accountability thing is on the studio. I don't think you can get anybody in the midst of, I don't think you can grab anybody in the midst of learning how to do something, take them out of it and go, now do it. And if you do it wrong, it's on you. I think that's really, I think that, but having said that, I think that that has to be met with an ambition and a work ethic and a willingness to do it as best and as fast you can and as effectively as you can. And if you fuck it up, cool. But you have to kind of, you know, meet as close to that halfway point as you can.
Yeah. It's both parties have to come with a sense of responsibility for what they're offering and what they're receiving.
Yeah.
Because it's true with any job that you start, you'll be learning. It's not just creative, you know.
Yeah, even if you walk in at like a decent level, you've probably got two or three months to get good at your job, right?
Yeah.
So I think, it's responsibility on both sides there,
Very good. Just took it up another level at the end there.
Yeah.
That was good. You know, thought we were going to just
damn
squib at the end, but no, it was like we finished high.
The whole thing was high. Yeah. Are there any low points? No,
not at all. So thank you very much
for
coming in. Where can people find you to conflict with you on Twitter? Just on the virtual.
I'm either at home, at a cafe near my house, or at work. That's pretty much it.
Or picking the kids up from school.
Or picking the kids up from school, which is right near the cafe, which is very useful. We can be found on Instagram and Twitter. I can be found at CD_and_co, which kind of doubles as company pages as well, which is just messy and confusing.
I always try and work out whether it's you tweeting or doing stuff or whether it's JC sometimes.
I run the Twitter and the Instagram.
And this is not uni.
Oh, and this is not uni. It is.
It's everyone.
It's everyone. Oh, those accounts? That's everybody. So everybody contributes to the Twitter and the Instagram.
And it's just
socials.
At this is not uni.
It's at this is not uni, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Just doing a little plug for you there.
I think you should check, yeah.
And Wilson, should people be able to find you or do you want to remain? Answered that question.
That's his username. It's at
____. well, no, I've got Twitter, but I don't use it. But my Instagram is WAISHUNWILSON. Like, it's super long. I just didn't want to have to say that all out.
Yeah.
It's there.
Okay,
it's
so we'll write that underneath the podcast, and that'll be fine.
That's fine.
Yes.
But yes, come and find us, please.
Yeah, so for us, I mean, has anyone found you off the... I feel like people, they might find you depending on what week it is.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, Sarah Penguin. We can spell that out, but I won't.
People have been listening to so many episodes. I don't know. And then obviously we're at NVR Not Creative on most things. Big thanks to Streamtime. So Streamtime basically makes sure that all of this happens, help us get these conversations going. So if you need help or are interested in running your creative businesses better, then head over to streamtime.net. I feel like in future we need to add a little bit of a like a discount or something onto that.
Yeah,
we've
sure.
never done, have we?
Sure. We can do that. Be
commercially savvy, wouldn't it?
Andy 10% off.
There we go.
Yeah, check out.
Yes, we should definitely do that. And yeah, and like, you know, we're also working on this internship project at the moment, so excited to see where that
What's
goes.
What's next with that?
We actually have our first meeting. You made it sound like we've done a lot of work already. Our first meeting is next week.
You guys had lots of meetups about this stuff.
We've done a few events and we've talked about a few things. But it's the key thing is to make stuff happen. And we've had such success with the mental health change group that we've done. Like so much stuff is happening that trying to take that model and put it into internships. So there's representatives from universities, business owners, actual students on it. So it's a big kind of mix of people all coming together to go, what can we do about it? So
cool.
It's exciting. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
It's like fingernails and tissue paper.
Tissue paper being crumpled up really quietly. People whispering.
It's a whole thing.
You could do like 30
Is there
cutting
on Spotify? Like, is there actually? Is. Yeah, is
that I listen to it regularly.
Do you do it to relax it to go to bed or?
Yeah.
It's like a sleep thing.
Yeah, really. Man, I really got the wrong steer on this.
Listen to a This American.
Getting freaky with it.
There's a This American Life episode.
So is it like therapy? Is there a therapeutic? There's a therapeutic angle to it.
It's meant to be calming. I haven't gone deep on it.
I'm very deep. I've been listening to it since 2013.
Oh, really? You're an original ASMR YouTuber.
An ASMR innovator.
Before it blew up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I love how this whole time you thought I was really into it, but it was like a sexual twist.
No, I thought there were different categories. I thought there were like if you wanted to have sex, you listen to this type of ASMR. I thought different types of ASMR had...
ASMR.
I thought different versions of it had different, like some were relaxing, some were... Yeah. Sexual. I don't understand.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Clearly. Can't even get the acronym right.
Nope. Exactly.
What is it? It's autosomal median response or something?
Sensory meridian response. But somebody made it up. It's not even like a real.
Oh, is that not even a thing?
It's not even a thing. Somebody just wanted to.